This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co., author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security, free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co. at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds Podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. This episode is another creative conversation about creativity in all its forms. These episodes are unscripted and uncensored, which I may regret for this episode. So far, I've spoken with Kate Temple, Adam Wallace, Joel McCarro, and today, you can understand my regret, James Layton, publisher at Larrikin House since 2019, bookseller to schools for 30 years, through curated value packs, book fairs, and author visits. Welcome back, James Layton.
Nice to be back, Danny. Thanks for having me. And yeah, you might regret this. Unscripted to me, don't good history.
Unscripted and uncensored. I went, what am I doing asking you on this podcast?
You're crazy.
Yeah, look, I thought Adam Wallace and I would struggle, but this is good. The struggle's going to be real. Yeah. So you appeared on this podcast 2021 for the first time when Adrian Beck and I were doing Publishing Insider, and we spoke to 10 publishers, agents, creative, people in the industry, and you were one of them because I chose Larrikin House because I really liked it.
They're all lame except for me.
Oh God, I've already got to edit this. I did not say that. I just wanted a variety of people, so it was really cool. And that's when you, Adrian, and I, we met for the first time.
Yes, we did. And it was starting point of many things. Many adventures. Starting of your book.
Yes, signing of my book as well, and then working for Larrikin and all the creative people we hang out with now and et cetera. Yeah. So thinking back to 2021 Larrikin House, and now we're in 2024, tell me just off the top of your head, what's been the biggest changes or things that you've learned?
Yeah, wow, it's been a real whirlwind trip in, 3 years? I think a lot's changed. I think meeting you and Adrian and then moving into sort of meeting a whole lot more established authors and people I'd never sort of met before changed the way we published a bit. I think we changed direction a little bit. We, as much as I loved publishing debut authors, and I'm still keen on that, I realised I did need more established authors to make the publishing business work and to get some better reach than what we were having. So, yeah, that's happened, and that's happened a lot, and we've signed a lot of established authors, and they have been really well received. So It's really helped. And we've had some really good success with a couple of books since then. So that's really helped as well. Because the year I spoke to you was our second year of publishing. Our first year, we launched our first books on April 1, 2020, when the world went into lockdown. We had
That's
20 books
funny in
by
a couple of
then.
ways, the date, April 1, and also
Yeah.
2020. Like,
Yeah.
it's a double
Yeah.
joke.
It is a double joke. And we were committed. So we were the fools because we had 20 books in the pipeline for that year, and we couldn't really back out when most of them were in production at some level. So we had to go ahead, and we did. And then we did another 20 in 2021, and it was still just as many lockdowns through 2021. But we made it through.
When did My Shadow Is Pink come out? Which year? Because obviously that was a massive success and it's kind of what put Larrikin House on the map, right?
That came out in August 2020, so that
Okay.
we're sort of we were deep into second lockdown, I think. It's
But
a
it
bit
made
of
no difference, right? So even though lockdown was really hard for many people and many books, a book like that still shone through.
Well, Scott's the reason for that. Scott Stewart, the author, he really positioned himself well in social media, and the book has done better via social media through Scott's social media networks than any other book I've seen or published. So that really kicked it off. And I think it found us an audience in the USA. So a year later, we started to distribute our stuff in the USA and the UK as well. And My Shadow's Pink took off immediately. We started to get foreign rights deals, offers, things like that. And it just sold. Throughout UK, Europe, and the US, it sold tremendously. The book did well here, but not as well as it did overseas. It did incredible numbers overseas. And I
And
think
still doing that, right? Still doing incredible
still to
numbers.
this day, the US sell, I don't know, 500 copies of every month, still. My Shadow is Purple came out, and that's done almost as well as My Shadow is Pink. It's only because it came
It's
out.
newer. It's like 2 years newer, right?
So yeah, that saved us as a publishing house. I think we would have really struggled through the COVID era, which I guess I'll call it. I had my school's business, which schools did shut down for a long time, but we still managed to sell books to schools, so that helped as well. So between that and the Shadow series, we're still here and still going strong. We're alive. We made
Which
it.
is a relief, I think, because I think a lot of people have said, and this is what attracted me to Larrikin House, so it's many years ago, not so many years ago, but was that it is that kind of small publisher, breath of fresh air, trying to do something different. And so the direction has changed a little bit for Larrikin House, and I think that's important because you need to listen to feedback. You've changed distributors, the world is always changing. So I think to stay the same, and I don't think you've ever done that with your business for 30 years, staying the same is kind of a risk. So in terms of, your vision at the very beginning, fun books that engage kids, how has that changed since now and why has that changed?
It's expanded into genre. So when I started, my field of expertise was picture books. It's what my school business had been focusing on for quite a while. Our first 50 books were all picture books, and we started to change genre. We first went with Adrian Beck, went into junior fiction, stories for 6 to 9 year olds, and then we've now, as you know, we've now published middle grade fiction, graphic novels, and there's an adult book in the pipeline. So what's changed is the genre, but we've still keeping that larrikin quirky, funny voice, that humorous voice. So my change of thinking was, it wasn't just funny picture books anymore. It's just humorous, interesting books that have that quirky voice in them. So it doesn't matter if it's a crime book, a romance novel, if it's got the right voice, it's a larrikin title.
And what
And
about picture books? Because we know that there are gatekeepers for those. So would you say that there's a little bit of a change of direction in the content of PBs?
100%. I knew from selling to schools that the gatekeepers are fairly open to funny, quirky picture books because they've got a lot of kids that they would call reluctant readers that don't love reading but want something that doesn't have a meaning, doesn't have a purpose, that just want it just to get kids reading. Bookshops and parents don't see it that way. Bookshops and parents, who are the gatekeepers in the commercial trade, they want books with meaning. And we've really struggled in the trade to get books that don't have any kind of meaning. A book that's fun and humorous for fun's sake doesn't carry weight with a lot of bookshop buyers, especially indie book buyers. And that's because the bookshop buyers, they're gatekeepers of the parents who are buying books that really want to teach and nurture their kids. So it's the parents that probably need a re-education in that space to say, hey, reading for fun, reading a book without a purpose or a meaning is still worthy in and of itself.
And I think that's coming back with librarians. I'm not sure about bookshops, but I remember not too long ago we were at a library conference in Sydney, and all the librarians, they were saying that they're looking for fun books, particularly for that, middle grade YA boys, and they were desperate for funny books.
Yeah, they are, because kids aren't reading. Kids are falling off reading in droves, and this is not a new pattern. This pattern's been going as long as I've been selling books. So I felt that a lot of the educators I've been selling to over years already understand this, but I think more and more are getting it now as well. They're realizing that a lot of your award-winning books aren't cutting it with the kids because they're too didactic, they're too serious, there's no buy-in for the kid. And as you know, we ask of any manuscript that we read, what's the buy-in for the kid? Is this a book a kid wants to read, or is this a story that an adult wants a child to read? And there's a massive difference, there's a massive difference.
And there's room for both. I just feel like there hasn't been enough room on the shelf for the funny books.
No, that's right. Well, the sales are in the serious books, so that's why there is room for both, or there's a need for both, but there's been less room for funny books because they don't sell as well. So unless it's, a really big name, they're not going to sell very well. And so breaking in a whole lot of unknown authors was really hard as well. So you've got humorous books without a lot of meaning or message by unknown authors. Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough run.
On April Fool's Day during COVID.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, you really do like a challenge.
Yeah.
I do recall a really early conversation that we had, and you were saying, "Oh, I'm not sure if I'm creative." And I thought that was a really odd thing to say because every time I'd worked with you, like my very limited experience of working with you back then, you were really creative and you always had really great ideas. And I know that you and I have talked about this a bit, but how have you changed your perception of your own creativity since sort of having those conversations?
A bit in the same way I've changed my view on ADHD. I always thought ADHD was for people that can't sit still and physically couldn't sit still, which I can, not realizing that if your brain can't sit still, it's the same. It's still ADHD. So that's changed my shape, my thinking. And that, well, my shaping with, I forgot what you asked
Yeah,
me.
it's your ADHD.
Yeah, wow. What did you, yeah, go back. What did you? I knew I shouldn't have used that ADHD metaphor. I'm like,
I'm so glad that you did because it
oh,
just
creativity. Yeah,
absolutely
no, creativity. You got it. Yeah,
proves
classic
the
idea.
brain. So
I'm back.
great. Yeah, okay, cool.
ADHD, creativity. So I'd always, in my head, imagine creative people as artsy people, either musical or people that can draw. So I'm pretty
We've
poor.
established that you
I'm good
can't
at drawing.
draw.
You
We've
don't.
established that you can't draw.
My drawing, I think your words were that is shit. That's I thought
Oh,
it was good, but
no, I said I think it was good if you were three.
yeah, that means it is shit. So I'd always attach creativity to artsy people that could draw and sing and dance. And I just never pegged myself as that. And then transitioning from bookselling into publishing, and bookselling is you read a book, you buy a book, you sell a book, it's fairly straightforward. Publishing is you making a book from scratch. So you have to, it's a very creative process from the word go. You've got to be able to visualize it from the very time you read the manuscript. And I just tapped really well into that space. I was surprised myself how creative I was and even my own ideas. And I realized, and again, part of an ADHD trait is brainstorming. If I put me in a brainstorming session, I'll annoy the crap out of everyone in the room because my brain just goes off with, one eye pulses with one idea after the other. So
But don't
Yeah,
you think as well, like
no,
you've run
it's
a
that fair
business,
voice.
you've run a business for 30 years, like surely you've had to think creatively to keep your business afloat because the world changes and the world must have changed in 3 decades. So surely there's creativity or creative thinking in that space too.
I just never put it down to creativity. In retrospect, looking back, 100%, I've never wanted to. I've always been aware of the blockbuster effect, that if you don't, if you're not willing to mold and shape your business to what the market is telling you to, you're going to be a blockbuster video. So I've always been aware of that. So I think every 6 or 7 years, our business has changed direction. I started off in a van selling books to schools myself. Then I started a book fairs business and a book club. And then I sold that and I went to telesales. And we've used a whole different model of selling. So through telesales, focusing more on picture books than nonfiction. And now it's changed again. So then we've introduced publishing. We're doing all sorts of things again now. So I'm always open to what's the next market direction and what's the market telling me? Like, not what do I think is going to be the next thing. It's like, actually, where's the market leading? Because there is always signs, at the moment in publishing, it's the same thing. What's the market telling us? Well, one obvious thing is reading is becoming way more visual than it ever was. So this is, again, not a new trend, but the rise of graphic novels, the rise of manga. My school business sells tons of both. More so than any other thing we sell, some more visual books now than ever. So, and that's because, the introduction of digital, there's a million reasons for it, but word counts are getting lower, pictures are getting more. So pictures are increasing, the visual is increasing. So visual literacy is even language for it. Even the language visual literacy wasn't common as far back as 5, 10 years ago. Now you hear it all the time. That's giving me a direction forward. So if I'm listening to that, I know, okay, whatever I do in the future in publishing, it needs to be more visual than it was before.
You're probably right, because I know as an English teacher that was always in our syllabus, visual literacy, but I think it's become a more common term amongst people now and book buyers and booksellers, etc. Going back to creativity and ADHD, I know we've been on a bit of a personal journey about discovering ADHD, and I sort of was in a bit of oblivion about it until people kept asking me, "Do you have ADHD?" And I was like, "Maybe I do. Maybe," because people keep asking me. Turns out, yes, bingo. And then I remember I said, "I think you should do this test." And I remember Jimmy, I remember you saying, "As if I'm going to be more ADHD than you." And you actually beat me by 2 points. Well done to you.
I did for
And you
once.
don't beat me in many things.
I do, but I don't let
So,
you. But
well, I
you're a
mean,
poor loser.
well, I know, because we
Even
just got back.
poorer winner.
I'm a very poor winner because we got back from Somerset, let me just remind you, and we went to a young writers dinner where we had to perform
I
with
remember.
kids. And who won that?
Our performance, my kids did a stellar job, and I thought we would should have won. And
But who did win?
I just think whoever did paid the judges. You look at something, you go, yes, your team won, and
My team did win. So anyway, we just
I'm still hearing about it now. That's
talking
the
about winning it. Well, it wasn't that long ago. And excuse me, someone said I would get to wear the crown for a year, so.
Well, and you'll wear it for 3 years, but hey,
Well, I'll just have to win again next year. That's all. I'll just at least beat you anyway.
exactly. Yeah, who are we competitive with here? So, yes, I did beat you on the ADHD test. Yes, and it's been a game changer for me understanding it. It's answered a whole lot of questions for me. But more on the upside than the downside. Yeah, there's a downside to everything, and there's a massive spectrum, as anyone would know, with any of these things. And there's a real, what I'd never heard much about ADHD was the upside, the hyperfocus, the things you can do if you've got it that other people can't do. And there's so much statistic around people with ADHD are more often entrepreneurs and creative types and things like that. And so many of those tick my boxes. I'm like, okay, what if ADHD is my superpower? What if I lean into this and rather than look at how do I, manage this? What if if managing it for me is leaning into it as much as I can and milking it, you know? So
So what do you think for you? Because I always say you've got the good version of ADHD, because I get the, debilitating anxiety part of it as well, but you don't, lucky you.
I
So what
win.
are, what was that?
I win
You
again.
win again, yeah. Well done. So what are the downsides for you?
The downsides for me is I can't remember
Anything.
anything much. I'll forget someone's name literally 4 seconds after I've been introduced to them. Like, things drop out of my brain so fast. My brain's quite full and things come and go quite fast. So I've got a really weird, strange long-term memory. I used to sell these musical books, sing books, back in the day. ABC produced these sing books, and we'd mail out to every primary school in Australia. And back then they would fax their orders in, and I used to love watching the fax go when the orders would start coming in. But you mentioned a school that ordered a book. So you say Baulwin North Primary School, I'll say 10 Maud Street, Baulwin. So this is in 1998. I remember their address. I remember how many books they ordered just from seeing a fax machine. And yet I can't remember what I had for lunch today. So it's weird, but I remember weird rando facts. I can put a Melways map reference to every suburb in Melbourne because I did that in 1992. I sat down with a map and mapped out every suburb in
There are
Melbourne
so
to
many
Melbourne.
people diagnosing right now. So moving right along, when I said unscripted and uncensored, that may not work for this episode.
We'll make it work.
Oh, now I've had a
But I
moment.
was saying,
Oh.
yeah, things fall off my brain all the time. So it's.
And you also lose track of time. Like for ADHD people, it's either now or not now.
Yeah. So I might have a Zoom meeting in 5 minutes. I go, great. I'll go make a cup of coffee. And when I go to make a cup of coffee, I see something that needs doing. And 20 minutes later, I'm on a forklift putting a pallet on a rack. And I've totally forgotten about the meeting. And it was literally, I've got a meeting in 5 minutes to 15 minutes later, I'm on a forklift and I've completely forgotten the meeting. So, yeah. So, not even calendars help me because I forget to look at the calendar. Everything in my life is in a calendar or I use to-do lists. But if I forget to look at them, they're useless. So, yeah, I guess there's a downside of organization because there's, I don't know. I don't feel down. I don't feel like it gets me anxious or depressed. So I'm thankful for that because it does for a lot of people. So I don't suffer anxiety in that sense. But I probably do have an anxiety, but it's just not, I don't feel it emotionally in that sense. It probably manifests physically through forgetfulness and other things and manic a little bit. My brain is quite chaotic. So sometimes I can be like, oh. And other times that manicness is euphoric. Like there's so much going on. It's like a weird euphoria about it. It's like I love it. So I mean, I say I'm my own worst enemy, but I set up my world. So I've got more going on than I can handle. And that's the thrill of that. And for a lot of the time, I actually managed to handle it all. So yeah. Is that an upside or a downside? I don't know.
No, it's just interesting, that's all. I think it is interesting. What's interesting is particularly later in life learning about your brain. And people said, oh, you'll have grief about not knowing it earlier, but I didn't feel that. I was like, oh, cool, what a relief, I finally know. So, I mean, you discovered it pretty late as well. How did that feel for you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly would have helped me knowing when I was at school, not being able to concentrate. Or it's answered so many things. And the other thing that there's regret over is so many things that have been leveled at me over the years as character flaws. Actually, they're not character flaws. It's just how my brain works. It's ADHD, you know. But for a lot of things that have been leveled as character flaws, this has been a real answer. So yeah, I wish I'd known, but whatever. And I know now.
It is interesting that you say that because people do point those things out as character flaws, and I had that myself. And yeah, it's nice knowing that you still may be flawed, but there's a legitimate reason for this.
I mean, go back to my childhood. No one had language for any of this stuff.
No.
Maybe some people working in mental health at the time did, but they weren't anyone that anyone ever talked about,
No,
not
and you didn't
positive.
talk about it. Even in my 20s, you didn't talk about anxiety. You just kind of knew something was going on in your head, but no one ever gave it a name.
Yeah, so a character flaw was a was low hanging fruit for everybody observing something. So
Yeah, that's true.
even exhibiting those behaviors, you could say, oh, you know, I'm not good at that or this or that. So it's but now I'm a lot kinder to myself, man. I think that's probably the biggest plus of this is I'm way more kind to myself and saying, okay, it's just my brain, that's how my brain works, let's make the most of it. Let's
It's
try our best to manage the downside and
But it's nice not to have to constantly apologize, as well. And I think it's also cool knowing someone who also has a similar brain as you and I do, because when you're late all the time, I don't take it personally. But I think it's nice understanding other people's brains, because when you're late, it's not because you're doing it deliberately to, be selfish or whatever. It's just how your brain works, And it's the same as my anxiety, I apologize that for all the time, but it's not like if you could turn the anxious brain off, you certainly would do that. So it's interesting.
I've loved learning. Like you and I both read a lot about ADHD, and we follow people on Instagram and read memes, and every one of them, you know, I was like, yes, that's me. Yes, that's me. It's so good. I love it. It's like, oh yeah, that's me too. It's me as well.
It's very affirming, isn't it?
It is very affirming. It's a good way to put it.
In tapping back into publishing and creativity, I think we both find it so rewarding, but also so frustrating, because you think what booksellers or what the DDS or what schools are looking for, and hopefully you get it right most of the time, and sometimes you don't get it right, and it's still very frustrating. So, what is your vision or your thoughts? And when we spoke about Larrikin House 3 years ago, what about 3 years into the future? What is your vision for the publishing house?
Yeah, I'd like to publish across. I'd like to become a fully fledged publisher at some point, not just a children's publisher. So we started as a children's publisher because the safety net for me was my school's business. Anything I publish, half of the print run can go into my own school's market. So I'm even if it doesn't work, I'm not going to lose my house, or I'm not going to lose too much money. But if I move into adult genres, I don't have that school's market as a backup. So that's a bit more risky, but it's where I want to go. I do want to become a fully fledged publisher. And I really want to keep that larrikin voice. I think it's a unique niche space in the marketplace. I think every publisher has their niche at some level, and I think this is ours. And we've settled on we're not everyone's cup of tea, but neither is anyone else. So people that like our tea, that's cool. And I think we can publish for those people who like our brand of tea. And I like brand of tea, so
And I think the brand has gotten stronger and stronger as well, and there's more understanding of what we're trying to do, you're trying to do as a publishing house.
yeah, I think so. And I think reading has more competition now than any time in history. I mean, once upon a time, you didn't even have TV. So reading was one of the, apart from sitting around and talking, reading was one of the only forms of entertainment. And TV comes in and reading faces its first challenge. Now with digital, reading's got more challenges than ever.
More competition.
Yeah, more competition. And it just means the content has to be as good as what you can get digitally. Like you have to produce rich content books, and that's the challenge. So I like it. I think it's a great challenge. I think who wants to publish boring stuff anyway, even if you could get away with it? Who wants to publish rubbish? So
That could be the new Larrikin House tagline. Who wants to publish boring
who
stuff?
wants to publish shit? Yeah, it's exactly right.
Question for you, because you do like funny, humorous, quirky books. Can anyone be funny in books? Can anyone be a funny author?
Oh, I think that's no. I'm gonna call it and say no. And I've read enough manuscripts now to know that some people just aren't funny. They want to be. We all want to be funny.
Are you funny?
Am I funny? Oh, you think I'm funny looking? You're funny. I think I am funny in my own way. Yeah, but okay. Here's the difference. Can I write funny? So I think Some people could be funny, but they may not be able to write funny. Some people are funny and they can write funny, and some people aren't funny and they can't write funny. But I don't think there's many people in quadrant number four
Oh,
who
that
aren't funny but can write funny. Like, let's put a call out. If you're not funny but you can write funny, I want to know about it.
what? That's really self-reflecting, because imagine like saying, "Hello, I'm Danny, I'm not funny." Like, do you know you're not funny?
Yeah, that's quite, yeah, well, that's funny itself, isn't it? You could write a story about somebody who knows they're not funny.
Unfunny. I think Adrian Beck did Unfunny Bunny.
Unfunny. Yeah, there you go. Now, I think I've read enough to know that as much as you want to be funny, and people do try to write for us and write on brand for American, but it is, humor, I go to a lot of stand-up comedy, and humor is often, it's just someone's power of observation. It's the way someone funny sees the world, and the things they see that are exactly the same as the things we all see, but the things that they notice are different to the things other people notice.
Yeah, or the spin on it or something.
And you think of Seinfeld, the show about nothing, and the things that made people laugh were everyday things that we all see every day, but we just hadn't thought of in the same way they thought about it. And I think it's a brain wiring thing. I think some people's brains are wired to observe the world differently to others. So I think it's all about observation. I think funny, yeah, it doesn't mean you're not funny. It just means you just don't see the world the way someone sees it in more of a comical way. Maybe unfunny people see the world too seriously, or they're not looking for the right things. And maybe if they were able to shift what they are looking for, they might become funny. I don't know.
And who's a writer of yours that you sort of read a manuscript and you're like, they are funny?
John Larkin's the next one. So John Larkin wrote us a middle grade fiction story called Brittany, now called Brittany and Co. Take on Paris. I read, I think, one or two chapters, and I just loved his voice. Even the opening line of the book is, he wanted to start with a funny line, which is, how often is it that, your mum gets arrested for transporting a horse on the roof of her car? That kind of weird, and then just the humour from there got me. So someone like that, I can sign them with on an unfinished manuscript. So he presented an unfinished 30,000 word manuscript. He gave me 3,000 out of 33, and I signed it. And then his next book, The Bogan Book Club, I signed on an idea. He hadn't written a single word because I knew his voice. I knew his powers of observation. I knew his humor. I can trust that. And pretty much, I don't need to read a lot of jobs to decide whether I want to sign it or not. He's funny like that. And what
Yeah,
else
he
is
is.
funny? I mean, everyone's funny in there. Everyone we've published has made me giggle at some level. In the way, even if, and a lot of unknown authors, and unfortunately, a lot of unknown authors haven't had the success they should have had, because I think some of them unknown authors we've published are really funny people and funny writers. And if they had, a well-known name, their sales would be a whole lot different. But I don't think I've published anyone I didn't think was humorous in some way
In
or
some
funny.
level, it's a tough gig. Now, you have been involved in, creative communities a lot for the last few years. How has that shaped the way you think about creativity, or has it impacted or influenced your own creativity?
Yeah, so in creative communities, you're talking about the author community. I think, creative communities I've found very refreshing and not as stuck in how they see the world. I think creative people see the world in a much more open-minded way. I've had experiences with different creative in different communities in the past where sometimes it's a lot more fixed thinking, it's a lot more static, stoic thinking. Whereas creative communities, I find, are very open-minded, and it's refreshing. I enjoy that, and it inspires me to be more of that myself. It almost gives me permission to be more creative and more outrageous, and hanging around some of the creatives we hang out with, I'm like, I could be more outrageous. I could be
Wow,
more.
you could be more outrageous.
Yeah, I have that.
Wow. Yeah,
Yeah.
cool.
You look
Looking forward. I'm
scared
looking
right
forward to
now.
that. No, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
it's already a tough gig not getting it cancelled, but hey, I'm up for the challenge.
Well, that's ADHD for you. You love it on, so yeah.
It's true. I mean, let's not mention the word that you said, but we're at a library conference, and I just sat there and said, in my
Porn.
brain, why did you say that?
Why did I say porn?
Yeah, to a room full of librarians.
Well,
Twice. You actually
twice.
said it twice.
Now, I remember you said to me, not only did you say porn once, you said it twice. It came into my head as I was telling a
You want
story.
to
Now,
give some context just in case people are home?
okay, I was telling a story about how my mum
It was
paired
such
me.
a lovely story to start with, and then.
It was good because I was saying as to a group of librarians, I bypassed children's books because I couldn't find myself in a book. I just couldn't find the right books. And my mum figured it out and figured I'd like Harold Robbins. Now, Harold Robbins was a pretty saucy writer for his time. So the
See,
first
saucy
I
was a
thought,
good word. You should have stopped at saucy.
yeah, well, the word that came to mind was it was porn. And then I went back to fix that a little bit and said, more like softcore porn. Yeah. And then. But it was like he was. So then
Look,
you said after that,
I think your
I'm
mum saved
all
that.
once.
That your mum saved that conversation because we did get plenty of comments about how good that talk was, and I thought, oh my
Yes.
God,
There
thank
you go. So you were wrong and I
heavens.
was right
I
on that.
just, I feel like you should use saucy next time.
You love a euphemism. I don't know any euphemisms.
I'm giving you one. I've just given you one.
Yeah.
Racy, you could use racy.
But you need to give them to me before I get up and come out of my mouth.
You'll just forget, you'll just drop out of your brain. But I
Then
did
you
look
know
up.
what I'm about to say, and not I know what I'm about to say. So it's never going to solve itself. I can't think of euphemisms fast enough. I'm
Just
like,
feel like in our practice runs, you didn't say that.
didn't. Practice run, schmactus run. When did we do practice run? I don't do practice runs.
Dot points, and we said we're going to talk about this. And it was a great speech. It's just if you're going to become more outrageous, I just need to,
In advance? Yeah.
need to
Well,
be prepared for that.
you're not going to because not even I know. So, yeah, look out. You're always shocked when I get a public speaking invitation. You're like, oh my God,
I do give you a list of
what are they
things.
looking?
And I do give you a list of things you're not allowed to talk about, which we are not going to mention now, because I've got enough editing to do in this uncensored, unscripted episode. So, shush.
Unedited, yeah.
Yeah, well, all the others have been unedited. This might need a little tweak
Really?
here and there.
I don't take back anything I've said.
We know. We know. Look, it has been really interesting to sort of come along for the ride. With you, with Larrikin House, because it's been cool to see like a small publishing house sort of grow and grow and grow and sort of get more exciting and have that brand really known. So that's been a real cool journey for me to be part of. What's been, before we end this fun little episode, what's been sort of the coolest learning or coolest thing that's happened in the last, what is it, 5 years now, publishing?
Yeah, that's easy. For me, it's 1 + 1 = 3. I think meeting you and you coming on board, Larrikin, added something I could never add on my own.
Oh, I
Not that I
didn't
haven't had a
ask that
thousand.
knowing you were going to say that, just disclaimer.
No, like, not that I haven't had, and I've had some really helpful contributors along the way. So, and some people that have been so invaluable to the growth of our business along the way. But you and I have the same head, and it's just there's something when the two of us get on something, it's big, and we're generally right when we decide on something. We see the world in a very similar way, which we thought at the start may be conflicting, but it's turned out the opposite. It's a 1 + 1 = 3. So there's a real force that I just couldn't have done that on my own. I don't think any one person can do it on your own. I don't know who Elon Musk's plus one is, but whether he's a weird
I think
solo.
it's his billions of dollars.
Yeah, probably it's his money. Yeah.
Yeah,
Money. 1 plus 1 billion.
I'm sorry you have me rather than a pile of billions of dollars.
Me too. Me too. I'll take it. Yep. No, I think I didn't see that coming. I never saw that coming. I thought you had a good. I noticed when you started doing our social media that you tapped into the voice almost as good, if not better, than I could tap into the own voice of the own brand that I created.
That's
You
scary.
found language for that voice that I don't even think I'd found yet. And you could articulate that voice very clearly. And I think that's why the brand has grown so much, because the voice has been so strong in all of our marketing, our presence and everything, our communication. You said you want to be like glitter, everywhere and hard to get rid of. Well, that's kind of what we've become, So I think, I don't know if I would have got there, or maybe I would have in 20 years without meeting you, but that's been my biggest observation in the last 5 years of publishing.
Oh, that's very cute. The scariest thing about that is saying that we have the same brain. I
I
mean, the
guess
most delightful thing.
I'm slightly smarter, but you're quite.
Okay, right. So next interview, we'll do an IQ test, shall we?
Oh, sure. Let's do
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you beat me on the ADHD test, the IQ test. So I don't know about that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Oh, don't give in so fast. It's no competition if you
I'm
give in
starting to feel
so
sorry for you losing all these competitions against me. I was just starting to feel sorry for you. I should have known better.
Where's the fire? Come on, we need the fire. Well, it's been super interesting anyway to have this conversation. I mean, I know all this stuff, but I'm hoping listeners will sort of see it's interesting to compare, the interview in 2021 as a publishing house and then looking at 2024 and then beyond, because we've got our list sort of set for 24, 25 and half of 26.
Yeah,
And
that's
that's
right.
something new as well for the publishing house. So we really know what we're looking for. We're looking ahead, we're planning ahead, and that's kind of cool as well. So
Least it feels like now we kind of know what
yeah, kind of. We give it a good old crack.
It's a sharp learning curve in publishing. You learn the hard way every way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for not saying too many things I have to edit. I mean, it's a bit of a lie saying uncensored and unedited because I probably have to
I'll
do a
be
little bit of
checking.
that
I'll
for
be
this
checking.
one. You
Yeah.
won't remember. You won't even remember what you said.
I won't remember. I've loved the creative process of publishing. I want to encourage anyone to lean into their creativity more, because I don't think we lean into our creativity enough. Maybe we live in a commerce-driven society that doesn't rate creativity over commerciality. And how many people, their parents want them to be a lawyer, but they want to be a writer. I think that being a creator, I've had both. I've made money in the past and I've had I'm creative. And I've enjoyed creativity much more than I've enjoyed making money. Making money,
Wow.
but I'm a happier person in a creative space, making less money
Yeah. Well, we've
than
talked about money before and how we like money, but not for money. We like it because it gives us freedom.
Yeah, it
And so
gives
I
me.
think we're actually after freedom and creativity. It just so
100%.
happens that money gives those things to you. I actually
I
do have a
know
final question. Sorry, go. What were you gonna say?
people. I know people with way more money than I have, but have way less freedom. So I love my life. I can pretty much do what I want to do. I work really hard, but I don't have to be at work at any particular time. Or, you know what I mean? There's
Yeah.
no. I've got that freedom to.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I didn't have otherwise. So yeah,
So I've got one final question for you that I just thought of, which is your favorite topic. It's about yourself.
oh yeah,
Even admits it.
agreed with that very quickly.
You did, you did. I think you meant to do that in your head.
We're
So we
both
talk.
pro-narcissism, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, as long as it's not the nasty type, just the type where you just sort of like confident in oneself.
Yeah, to the
Yeah.
point of
Moving right along. So we talked about the publishing house changing, we talked about creativity changing, and all these things. I think in the last 3, 4, 5 years, you've gone on a personal journey of creativity and self as well. So how have you changed, Jimmy?
Oh, Jimmy. Okay, how have I changed? Oh, yeah, I feel like I've stepped into myself more. I felt more permission to be me and who I want to be. So, you're talking about the fact that I've got 14 more tattoos than I used to have. Yeah,
That's one aspect.
that's one aspect.
I think I met you. You're a clean skin when I met you.
Yeah, I was, and now I'm 30.
And now what? We got 14. I've lost count because
Something
by the
like
time
that.
the episode comes out, it could be 17.
Could well be that's how it works because I live opposite a tattoo parlor and ADHD works. So it's like, oh, I've got an idea for a tattoo and I'll walk up the road and I'll get it done. So that's,
So what was the shift of that? Was that just leaning into who you are, or was it a curiosity, or was it a catharticism, or what was it?
with the tattoos or with the
Yeah, well,
everything?
everything. The tattoos, yes, since we're on that topic, but then
There's some
everything.
catharticism to it. I think not that I felt restricted in that, but I realized I'd shrunk into myself in that space. I had got lazy within myself. I'd lost sight of who I was as a person. I'm seeing a lot more color. I buy more art. I buy more plants. I decorate an apartment the way I want to do it. I've decorated my skin, telling my life story. They're not meaninglessly tattoos. I'm telling my life story through my art. I'm becoming more artistic in everything I do about life. I cook better. I eat better. I, look after myself better. Lots changed.
That. Thank you for being so honest. That's what we like about this creative conversation.
Often too honest, but,
Yes, you are. I'll sort it. Don't worry. So at the beginning when I said unscripted, yes. Uncensored, yes. Unedited, no.
Well, that's our life, isn't it? It's our
Just to be completely honest with listeners.
life.
Yes, no.
And we wouldn't have it any other way.
Wouldn't have it any other way. And just so you know, this is the first creative conversations that I will have to go and edit, and I knew that from the very beginning.
I
So
couldn't tell you that one.
anyway, thank you for
And
sharing
everyone's
all of
going to be
that.
wondering what you've edited. So
I know.
can you give some drop some hints to what they're not going
Oh, just things that either
Is
maybe,
Paul going to make it?
yeah, Paul will make it.
All right.
Just things that may be taken in a way that might get you cancelled.
Oh, what
Seriously?
like?
I'm still recording.
I was trying to keep you saying it, and then you forget to edit that bit. Most people know.
Wow. You really underestimate my intelligence, don't you?
No, I do not. Learned again.
I knew I'd enjoy this. You're always interesting to talk to, you know that. But didn't know how it's going to go on the podcast. But I think it's been really interesting. And thank you for sharing all of that. And we'll let you go now before you start giving us your full life story.
That's true.
It'll be like a 10-hour episode. Back at Bonnie Doon. And this is
Back
true,
on
people. If you
yeah.
don't know, James actually grew up in Bonnie Doon. I know that will not surprise any of you.
Yes, well,
And your most recent tattoo, before we go, a bit of a nod to Bonnie Doon. Tell us about it.
it says, "How's the Serenity?" A line from the movie The
How's the
Castle.
serenity?
And so I was at Bonnie Doon before they filmed The Castle, and then they made no one knew anything about Bonnie Doon until they made that movie. Now the whole world knows about Bonnie Doon.
Loved
Very
it.
cool. It was a very cool place to spend my teenage years. It's very
And there's no one better suited to have grown up at Bonnie Doon than you, really.
endless summer holidays. It was fantastic.
Sounds like your life now, really.
Well, kind of. Why I've been saying my life. Maybe my life's got worse.
All right, I think it's time to end the podcast right now. Thanks, Jay. Thank you for all of that.
Pleasure. Always good talking.